And welcome back to the Long Distance Love Bombs podcast. I am your host, Dr. Jeremy Goldberg, and my guest today is Kyle Lipton. Kyle is somebody that came across my path via a random Instagram post of a hilarious video where a man was wearing upside-down sunglasses and shaking a rattler and mocking the spiritual community. And I was intrigued and I was perplexed at my laughter. So I reached out to the guy and said, hey, you seem interesting. You want to be on the podcast? And he said, yes. So Kyle is a comedian that is revealing the cosmic joke. He likes to brand himself as a cosmic comedian. He's also a transformational mentor and self-proclaimed psychic. He's an interesting dude. And this conversation is one that continues to stick with me even days after we had it. It's been about a week now, and I'm still pondering various things that came up in this conversation. In particular, he talks about the idea that intuition is or requires the practice of trusting your first thought. And I've been contemplating that in the context of trauma and trust and all the rest. We also talked about the idea of overthinking being an indicator of under-trusting. We talked about closing the various tabs of your life, of your mind, as if you were running a Google Chrome operating system. It's a good one, and it's a fun one. It's lighthearted and profound. Kyle and I seem to be very aligned in the way that we view the world and the way that we describe it. There's a lot of metaphors in this, a lot of visuals, a lot of strange tangents, but overall, I loved it, and I took a lot away from it, and I think that you will too. I want to first share with you a recording of the audio from one of the Instagram posts that first got me chuckling and in this guy's space, so that you know a little bit more about his personality, and then we'll dive into the conversation.
Hey, can we be in a relationship where I fuck other women, and we're non-committal, and we call it sacred freedom? Hey, can we make super vague plans and call it a divine appointment, and then I ghost you an hour before? Hey, you want to travel all the way across the world and do plant medicine only so we can talk about it on social media and sell our masterclass? Hey, can I pretend like I like you for 2 weeks and then we have sacred sex and then I say it's just not in alignment anymore? Hey, can I borrow money from you and never pay it back and just call it the flow of abundance in action? Hey, do you want to go to a festival and subconsciously avoid all of our responsibilities and how bad our credit scores actually are? Hey, can I listen to you for a very long time without actually listening just so I can feel significant and call myself a divine space holder? Hey, I'm going to talk really slow just so you perceive me as someone who's done a lot of internal work on myself.
So that's a taste. And now, please enjoy this conversation that I had with Kyle Lipton. Kyle Lipton. Welcome to the podcast, brother. How are you doing?
I'm doing amazing, man. Super happy to be here and jam with you. And get to know you. We don't really know each other, so I'm super stoked to get to know you, bro.
I know, and I sort of rushed through the preliminary introductions that you do before you start recording because I've done so many of these through the years, and there's often some good stuff in the things that are not recorded. And so now I'm just like, fuck it. But for those listening, we got connected because one of the videos that you made on Instagram got sent to me several times. And I was like, this guy's funny. This guy's relatable. I like this dude. He's doing it differently. I think he'd be a good podcast guest. And I think I just sent you a message like, hey, man, I'm Jeremy. Want to talk? And here we are.
Yeah, I was like, yo, that's cool. I love talking. Let's talk.
Talking's grand. But for those who don't know you, have never seen your work, how do you describe yourself? Like, who are you?
Yeah.
What's your deal?
You know, outside of saving puppies from burning buildings and talking to Jeremy, I consider myself like a cosmic comedian. You know, one of my purposes here on Earth is to reveal the cosmic joke, and that can reveal itself in many different ways. Like, for example, fighting for peace, or all of the ways in which our ego tries to get something when it only ever always does the opposite of what we're trying to get to, unconsciously, usually. I support clients. I'm a psychic. I support people with transformation. So I've been doing that in the realm of supporting clients for the past 7 years and been funny my whole life. Came out the womb just cracking jokes. So that's why I've done the whole comedy thing. I do a lot of comedy skits online. Just making fun of and enjoying things and putting my creativity to work in exploring that through comedy. And it seems that it's touched a lot of people in the process, which has been really, really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe there's a way that I can get the audio from one of your Instagram videos and kind of like put it here so that people cool. have some context for who you are. Would that be all right?
Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah. Okay. You're not gonna come after me with a lawsuit or something while promoting yourself on a podcast.
Yeah.
So okay, you've touched on a few of the things that I wanted to dive into, but this idea of the cosmic joke and communicating it and clarifying it, what does the cosmic joke mean to you? Can you expand on that or say a bit more on that?
Yeah, I'll give a perfect example. Right. And I was in the car earlier with a friend of mine, and she was telling me how she'll reject other people or before she other people have the chance to reject her, as an example, or she'll reject herself before other people have a chance to reject her. And the cosmic joke, well, in moments like that where it's very tender, isn't funny. That's a prime example of where the ego would go. And I'm going to reject myself so that I can get love, or I'm going to fit in. Great example would be people pleasing. I'm going to morph myself into someone else so that I can fit in. And then when I get in that group, when I finally achieve my goal, I feel lonely as fuck because I'm still not myself. So we reject our soul in order to fit in, but we can't actually energetically experience fitting in until we stop rejecting our soul. So I love to illuminate that in sessions with clients and through my comedy.
Yeah. And what is the process that you utilize for that? Or do you, maybe we should start, let's zoom out. Like, how did you get into this space? You know, you mentioned that you're a psychic, which is immediately interesting. I think it's one of those words that just has deep resonance and like is covered in glitter. Like when someone uses that word, it's like, interesting. Let's talk about that. So how did you get into this space? To where you are now, etc. Can you give like a quick biographical background?
Yeah. Originally born and raised in Los Angeles, grew up with a family with a lot of love, not a lot of money. By the age of 14, 15, we ended up living in a homeless shelter for like 9 months. I ended up getting into personal development actually at the age of 14. I was a basketball player desiring to play professionally. And one of my biggest challenges was I practiced and I trained harder than anyone that I knew, but every time that the spotlight was on me and it was game time, I got scared. And I was so obsessed with wanting to get to where I wanted to go. I started watching videos online about how to be more mentally tough, how to turn my negative thoughts into positive thoughts, being in like the bathroom stall before a game, started reading affirmations on a little crumpled piece of paper. And that kind of took me down the rabbit hole. You know, you start learning how to feel less sad. And the next thing you know, there's like some indigenous man shaking a rattle over your face in the middle of South America and everything in between. And that's kind of how it started. And then to segue into the psychic bit, I was working for a guy who was also mentoring me. And he runs retreats and workshops around the world in the personal development space. And I remember him telling me something. He said, practice trusting your first thought. So I just started playing around with that, as big as booking a trip across the world with no money and seeing how far life supports me and how far I can take it, to as small as go to Ralph's right now and buy almond milk. You need it, even though you don't drink almond milk. And the first moment when I really knew I could trust my psychic abilities, I was in the, for those who have ever been to Los Angeles, I was in a place called the Third Street Promenade in Santa Monica, hanging out with one of my friends. And I saw this vision of the friend that I was with, his soul being strangled. And I remember I was like, let me just practice trusting this thought. shared it with him. His eyes look like he saw a ghost, and he's been struggling a lot with self-expression. I see that. And based upon his feedback and the look in his eyes, I took that as confirmation I could trust myself. So more than any modality, because I've had people ask me this before, more than any modality, not that I haven't studied things or watched countless interventions and learned and examined, the most powerful modality that I found is two things. It's one, it's love. Loving someone. You can't judge someone into transformation. And two, trust. Trusting. I trust that whatever my heart and soul has to share with someone is 10 times more powerful than any NLP or process I could take someone through. Not to discredit those, because they are powerful. But that to me has been the secret ingredient, if you will, in creating transformation in my client's life and in my own life. Like, I have literally continually lived the dopest movie production of my own life as a byproduct of this trust and love and trusting. I'll say this because I don't want it to go too long, but I liken intuition as God whispering to us. Right. And I don't believe, no matter what circumstance you're in, whether you have $2 in your bank account, whether you just got out of a relationship, if that intuition is telling you to do something, the support will inherently be encoded into that. I don't believe that God, spirit, source, Buddha, whatever you believe in, will whisper a direction into you and say, go this way to fuck your life up. I think it will only ever always be to make your life better. And the process, the middle part is learning to trust that. And I've just leapt and leapt and leapt. And there's a good quote by Terence McKenna. He says, this is how magic is done. I jumped into the abyss and I realized that it was just a bed of feathers. And I've taken that jump so many times for myself with like the craziest manifestation stories that I'm able to take other people there with me and do it in integrity. Because I do that for myself.
I love that. Practice trusting your first thought. That is,
yeah.
My friend Brandon Collinsworth would say, that is a bar.
That is a bar.
That is a line. and I've experienced that numerous times on this podcast where my brain will say, ask him about blank. And then my other part of my brain will kick in. It's like, no, that doesn't make sense. You can't say it that way. We're on a good track right now. And I'll throw this random question out there and it will open up like Minesweeper. If you've ever played that little computer game, unlocks this space and suddenly we're down a rabbit hole of something really beautiful. And so trusting my first thought, one thing I want to go back to is you living in a homeless shelter. You drop that. You were living as a teenager in an LA homeless shelter for nine months, I think you said. Can you say more about that? What was that like? What did it teach you? That seems to be a unique living situation.
Yeah, definitely. I would consider that unique. So I remember I was living in a place called Westchester, California. It's a little, I don't know, little town city within the LA area, close to the airport. And I remember I had a friend over, and I remember he had to use a flashlight in my bathroom to go pee because we had no electricity. And I remember not too long after that, we had to move out of the place where I basically spent my entire childhood and moved into hotels. And then eventually we found this place in Los Angeles called Upward Bound House, which is like transitional housing for families. They provide you food, shelter. But man, it was an interesting time. It was me, my dad, my little sister who has Down syndrome, who's my absolute best friend, and my mom for the first 3 months, all in just one room. And being 14 years old, kind of like right in the peak of all the hormones raging, you're still kind of figuring out who you are. It was tough in moments, but you know what? Just the fact that we had such a solid family unit didn't make it feel too bad. It definitely was a big transition, of course, but because there was that family bond, it didn't feel nearly as bad as it could have if my family was in chaos or rupture. It was, but yeah, it taught me a lot. And I would say one of the things that it taught me was I'm just reflecting on this now. One of the things that it taught me is, you know, everything's temporary. The tough times are temporary. The good times are temporary. And things pass, things change. And you can create such a different situation for your life, no matter where you come from.
I think one thing that you and I share is a fondness for meditation. And I did one this morning, and the word that kept being utilized by this teacher is equanimity, to the point that I tease my partner about it so often that she will use it back to me of just equanimity. And it sounds like that was a visceral experience and just radical acceptance of the situation, not judging it as bad and just going with the flow, so to speak.
Totally. And, you know, I say this, I've had to remind myself, but also clients, it's when you argue with reality, you lose 100% of the time, right? I'm not going to walk into a sushi restaurant and go, why the isn't there steak here? I'm going to accept that I'm in a sushi restaurant, take my legs, walk to a steakhouse, and enjoy the steak. And yeah, that's just such timeless wisdom.
Timeless wisdom that, in my experience, is so difficult to remember in certain circumstances.
For sure, in the heat of the moment, I've had my fair share of just using reality as a punching bag and getting smacked back time to time again.
Yeah. Okay, one more random question, and then perhaps we'll get more on track with what I was hoping to talk to you about. But what was it like having a sibling with Down syndrome? You referenced her being your best friend.
Yeah. Like, I still have her.
I know. I meant like growing up. Growing up with a sibling with Down syndrome.
It's been amazing, man. She's, I think from a very young age, she taught me a beautiful sense of compassion and attunement to her and to my family dynamic. And from a young age, I was very quiet and observant. So I would assess and not want to add more pressure to the family. So I would kind of step back, observe the dynamics. And she's my best friend. I taught her how to speak when she was 4. I taught her first word. We talk all the time. Her first word was volcano. It's pretty dope. And yeah, she's the absolute one of the loves of my life.
Amazing. Volcano is a badass first word.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, credits to the teacher, but, you know, credits to the student too.
3 syllables? That's it. That seems like an advanced one. No dada shit. Okay. So getting back onto intuition and the cultivation of that, I think there's a lot of alignment with the way you see the world and myself. One thing I've written about is the idea that heart whispers and fear shouts. It's like the heart whispers, like the, I think you said God's talking to us or the universe is talking to us in a whisper. In my experience is the fear starts shouting, the justification, the worry, the shoulds, et cetera. How do you navigate that yourself when those fears start shouting? Or what would be the process to practice trusting your first thought? Like I want to dive into that because I think it's powerful. It seems simplistic and trite, but I think it's a really profound idea.
It is. I would say the practice is literally trusting your first thought. And I could extrapolate on that. I'll give a great example, and I'm sure you've experienced this. I'm sure plenty of people have experienced this. I would say maybe especially men, but I'm sure a woman could see this and identify herself in this example. You know, you're on a first date. Things are going really, really well. And there's that moment, like, should I kiss them? And you feel in your intuition, your heart's like, kiss them. And then the mind goes, but what if they reject you? What if they don't feel the same way? What if they think you're creepy? Whatever kind of stories the mind can play out, and practice just leaning in, literally, physically, energetically, emotionally, leaning in. And it could be the silliest thing. You know, I traveled the world on, like, started out on a $300 credit card, started out like on $120. I went for 3 months. I stayed a month in England on about $60 I started with. And my first two nights booked, didn't have any idea where money would come in from. And still, it's the same, whether it's on a big stage or whether it's just go get almond milk, it's just practicing. Literally, and I think meditation's a great start. It's learning how to quiet the mind. It's tapping into playfulness. It's tapping into, like a kid, right? You see kids at the playground, they're not pulling tarot cards as to whether they should go on the swings or the slides first. They just trust their first thought. They're like, I want to go on the slides. I want to go on the swing. Because they don't have this concept of what's the right first move or the right second move. So play with it, you know, and it's okay if it doesn't, you know, you don't have to write me after the podcast and go, Kyle, I went and got almond milk and nothing happened. But it's being in the trust. It's just literally waking up. You could even set a day for yourself for a couple hours and be like, I'm just going to trust everything my instinct wants me to do for the next 2 hours, whether it's call mom and tell mom I love her, whether it's take a drive 40 minutes away to a town that I don't know why I'm supposed to go. Today, I had a very strong intuitive hit, go to this restaurant. And two of the people that own the restaurant, work at the restaurant, are coming to my show tomorrow. And had I not went there, that might not have transpired. So you can use it in big, it's universal, right? Whether it's God's whispering to you in a small way or a big way, it's still going to lead to something amazing. And we have to practice, because with the practice, you then receive the evidence that that was a good idea. And a friend of mine said this. He said, logic doesn't contain intuition, but intuition contains logic, right? And how I relate that is, you might not know why it's logical, why you're traveling across the world on $60. You might not know why it's logical that you're buying almond milk. But I'm sure most people could look back in hindsight and see how some of the decisions that didn't make sense made the most sense looking back. So then it begs the question, what actually is logical? Because usually what we call logical is just fear intellectualized. And the true logic is the logic of our soul, the one that says, say this, I don't know why you need to say this, or call this person right now. Oh, they were just thinking of me. It's just the practice, really. That's all I can say. It's the practice of trust and then doing the things in your life, like playing, like getting into your body, like dancing, that evoke that connection and that sense of trust as well within yourself.
Yeah, from that perspective, it seems entirely illogical to reject your intuition if you believe that it is the universe communicating to you. Right.
That is 100% surmises the reason why I live like that, because it seems illogical to not do that anymore. And it's like I've short-circuited the stupid part of my brain that wants to give all the excuses. And I'm just like, nah, it's dumber to not listen to it. And I don't mean this in a shaming kind of way, but I mean this just how I experience it. It's like, I say this to clients sometimes. I feel so seen that you said that, because no one has ever spoke to it that way. But it's you can't just skip a lesson, right? You're going to have to reincarnate as like a woodchuck and have to learn how to like take a leap of faith. And it's like, why not do it when you're in this really cool human body? You can't skip it, whether it's this life or the next. So once again, coming back to logic, it's like, well, why not face it? Be compassionate. Take your time if you need to, but don't lie to yourself that that's not going to have to be faced at some point in time.
Yeah, that's well said. It reminds me of this dude, Derek Sivers, I had on the podcast. He's a big thinker. He's an author, really interesting guy. And on that episode, we talked about thinking and different ways of thinking. And yeah, it's really fascinating. But he just did a post not too long ago where he has been experimenting with this idea of believing things, even though they might not be true. And what he means by that is, can I create my life and my world around me in such a way that it feels great and it feels exciting and it feels bliss-led, even though they might not actually be true? And so I raise this because one example might be a belief around my intuition is the universe speaking through me or speaking to me, right? And you might not necessarily somebody listening might be like, that's not true. Intuition is a complex chemical cocktail, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, cool. Like, what if you just experimented with the idea that it is true? Like, what if you just played around with that for a while and see what happens?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And it makes total sense. And, you know, I think there's all these, this is one of the funny things too. There's all the subsections of spirituality. There's like the, dude, I'm just blissed out in my off-grid community house with all my friends. We started growing chickens in Costa Rica, like just another San Pedro ceremony. Then you have the other people who are like, I studied Gabor Mate. I'm into the polyvagal theory. I need to regulate my nervous system and continue regulating it until I know. And I'm speaking a little tongue in cheek just to be humorous, but it's questioning those things as well. It's going, okay. Because sometimes the biggest somatic release I can experience or I can guide a client to experience comes from them trusting their intuition. And what I've seen sometimes, and this is more subtle, is we think we need to continue regulating our nervous system and doing another thing and another thing, and I just need to prepare more. Which, funnily enough, sometimes somatically, things can start to just naturally shift in the body from going, I love you, or I'm booking the trip, or I'm doing this. And then naturally, our energy starts to come back into our body because we're not resisting that God voice, that intuition, because it's like all this universal energy, if you want to call it, is trying to rush through us. And then we stop it and go, I just need to personally develop myself just a little bit more until I'm ready. And God's like, the time is now. And you're like, no, but you don't understand, God. I need to regulate the nervous system. And God's like, your nervous system will be regulated as soon as you take the leap. You're like, but you don't get it, God. I'm me. I know better. And that's the simplicity, though. But the other side of the spectrum would be, if I had an intuitive hit, like, Kyle, you need to, you know, do somatic breath holding in a cave in Wichita, Kansas for the next 3 months continuously, I'd be like, all right, don't know why, but let's do it. And it's just being willing to listen to whatever's true. And a mentor of mine, he had a mentor who said, the lineage of mentors, he said he had an acting teacher. And in his acting class, this teacher said to him, the truth of the moment is more interesting than any story you could ever come up with.
It's a bar.
And to me, that it's a bar. And to me, it's so profound because I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but you could be in a conversation with someone and you're trying, you can feel there's something in the space. Someone needs to say something. And you notice yourself kind of just talk around it. And it could be an interesting conversation. But the tension in the space starts to multiply because someone's not saying the thing or leaning in for the kiss or saying what they really want to say. And that, to me, is far more interesting than the most advanced intellectual conversation because there's no spirit in it. And when we come back to just the simplicity, which is why the same teacher, two different teachers could say the same thing and one will land a lot deeper based upon that person's connection to themselves. And yeah, this whole world's just fascinating. It's basically what I'm trying to say. I geek out on the world.
By all means, we're kindred spirits there. And you reminded me of your quote at the beginning about the abyss being mistaken for a bed of feathers or whatever it is. And when you were describing the tension in somebody, I could see them saying like, no, I can't go to the abyss. I just need to relax. I need something soft. I need to find somewhere to lay down for a minute. And everybody else is kind of like, go to the abyss, because the abyss from our perspective is actually the bed of feathers. It's actually the thing that you need, but you're rejecting your intuition because you're in an illogical conversation with the universe and trying to practice trusting.
Right. And that is the cosmic joke, right? You get the thing that you need from doing the thing you don't want to do sometimes. You're like, I just need to relax first. I'm like, you can't relax because God's trying to push you off the cliff and you're fighting God. So how are you ever going to relax? Because you're tense, because you're resisting the universal hand that's trying to give you everything that you want. And if you just let it push you off the cliff, yeah, sure, scream on your way down. But then the moment you land on some orthopedic pillow from Egypt, you're like, you know what? I probably could have trusted this like 10 lifetimes ago, but I'm glad I'm here now and I'm relaxed.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely that. Another way I've described this is is that the anxiety exists in the uncertainty. I feel like it's very easy or very common from my own experience and, you know, working with people that will overthink, overanalyze, weigh the pros and cons. We just need to listen to one more podcast or talk to one more person for recommendations, and then I'll know for sure. And all of that does is builds up this anxious energy inside. And then once you make the decision, do you stay? Do you go? Do you get the almond milk? Do you get the soy milk? You know, then it's like there's a relief there because there's some certainty, right? And you could work with that.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And that, you know, the fear of the unknown on a deeper level is really just the fear of ourselves.
Go on.
So if we take the kind of essence of spirituality, I think most people would agree, there's this kind of universal teaching that we're all one, right? So how could the unknown ever be separate from us? So with that knowledge, if we're going into this, was a game changer for me when it first shifted for me, it's that the unknown is just me. And when I realized that, I was like, oh, there's nothing to be afraid of. It's just more me. So I'm not actually afraid of the unknown. I'm afraid of myself and whatever thoughts that I'm projecting into the unknown, because there's nothing scary about the unknown inherently. It's just the unknown, right? I could be at the top of a roller coaster thinking this is going to be fucking sick. Or I could think, what if this thing falls off? Still me doing me stuff on the roller coaster. So instead of it being about the unknown, let it be more about what kind of me stuff is happening when I'm in the middle of the unknown. And then the cosmic joke is we're never not in the unknown.
It is the cosmic joke. Like, the cosmic joke is like, you're never in control. You think you are.
Right.
Control is an illusion.
It's like skydiving. I've never been, but I can imagine, and I've been in similar-ish situations that I can, not that there's many things similar to skydiving, but when's the scariest time when you're about to skydive? It's the time when you're at the edge. Not when you're hurling 20,000 feet in the fucking air with absolutely no guarantees you're going to make it down, but it's literally when you're safe on the plane, that's when it's the scariest, which kind of illuminates the sort of fallacy of our own. The time when I should be the most scared is when I'm hurling through the fucking air. The time when most people are scared is when they're completely safe.
Yeah, that cosmic joke again.
Yep.
I've never been skydiving, but I have been bungee jumping in Zambia, which is a pretty cool sentence to say. And I can confirm, I was standing on the very edge looking down off this bridge, and there was a man with his hand behind my back about to, you know, give me the shove, and they do the countdown. And I was completely filled with terror because I'm not a fan of heights. And he starts counting down, and I remember turning to him and glaring at him, saying, "Not yet. Like, I'm not ready yet." And I scared him. I startled him. And he's like, "Okay." And he took his hand off my back. And then I kind of jumped into your point. Once you jump, it's like, it's a very different sensation as you're falling to earth. Like, you don't have time to feel terror in my experience. All you have time for is to experience the falling and the praying that the rubber band will catch you.
Yeah.
And there's a tremendous amount of freedom, I think, in that. Like giving yourself to the bed of feathers, metaphorically.
For sure.
I'm in. I'm on the ride. Let's go.
Yeah. If I take nothing else from this podcast, it's that I also want to have the bragging rights that I bungee jumped in Zambia.
Cool.
That is a cool sentence. Yeah.
Super cool. And I remember it was one of the most memorable experiences of my life because they pick you up, they wheel you back, put you on the bridge. And then the way that this one was set up, I had to walk to the end of the bridge, which was Zimbabwe. And then I had to walk back on the bridge to Zambia. But my system was so pumped full of every hormone, chemical, stress relieving cocktail. I was a buzz. And I remember very vividly walking across the bridge, and another woman came to me. And I remember thinking, wow, she is so beautiful. This is the most beautiful person I've ever seen. And she was just a, not just, but she was like a 50-year-old Zimbabwean, totally normal looking lady. But I was so pumped up in the present moment that I was just enraptured with being alive.
Well said.
That was crazy. It was just a, and then for about a good 10 minutes there, I was just, as Dane Cook says, like Bugs Bunny on the moon, just like, bing, I am full alive. Anyway, help us get back on track here. I don't know where I was going with that.
But, well, I think before the podcast, you were telling me you had this whole other family in Africa. So is that kind of the backstory? Of-
well, do you want to hear a random story, Kyle?
Sure, why not?
I don't think I've ever talked about this publicly, but I feel like the tables have been turned and now I'm a guest on my own podcast. So I appreciate your grace. I once got a Facebook message out of the blue from someone I did not know. Yeah. And it said something like, hey, do you know a woman named Kay Smith? You guys met in, you know, Johnsonville in 2011. You guys played darts at the bar. And I was like, this is the weirdest message I've ever received. And I sent it to a buddy of like, haha, the spammers are getting really good. Like, isn't this amazing? And that, my buddy is like, dude, that guy is looking for his dad. And I had this moment of like, oh shit, like, where is this town? What year was that? Who is this? I like paid real close attention and I Googled the town and it was in Africa. And I'd been in Africa, but like a year later, long story short, I'm not the father of this person. But when you just said, do you have a surprise village in Africa? It triggered this memory of like, there was a moment where I was questioning my life decisions and imagining that possibility. Okay. I'm going to take the podcast host back again. What is like an edge that you're currently leaning into, or a level or a layer that you're unpacking in your own life when you reflect on all the things that we've been talking about?
It doesn't feel like it's a, there's a couple things actually. One of them would be, I feel I'm stepping into a new level of fierceness and clarity in terms of my own leadership and seeing the opportunities where I get to exercise that more. And really, I think there's a bit of a fear, but also more of an exhilaration with this sense of really playing a big game and taking up all the space that I'm meant to take up. And that to me is, I say this to clients sometimes, like, go towards your inspiration, because all your bullshit's going to come up anyways. You don't need to go looking for it. When you do the thing that you're terrified to do, when you go towards the, it's like, it's being willing to deal with the stuff that comes up along the way, but it's realizing that in the path of expansion, if you will, it's, I say this, it's like life is always supporting us. I was supporting a client of mine today, and I'll get back to myself as well, not to try to divert, but I was supporting a client of mine today. She's a single mother, shared custody. She's burnt out, just going through it. And she was saying how she was sad because her daughter was reflecting back to her that, like, mommy is, I want to go hang with dad. I like hanging with dad more. And she was going through it. But she also, when she spent time with her daughter, she was half present, tired, exhausted, not taking care of herself. Now it's like, if you look deeply, because I know it stings on a personal level, but if you can kind of look a little bit deeper and see the metaphysical invitation, your daughter is reflecting back to you that she wants to hang out with the real you, the you that's nourished, that's taken care of. And, you know, look past the kind of the smoke and mirrors that's happening on the physical level and see that that same daughter of yours, I guarantee you, you start taking care of yourself and showing up for yourself differently and putting in boundaries, that statement won't be coming out of her mouth anymore. But that's God, that source, whatever you want to call it, speaking to you through your daughter to support you in your next level of expansion. And it's fascinating Because I said to her, I said, if your daughter just was people pleasing and not fierce and not alive and in your face about it, it wouldn't be the fuel that you need to actually shift, because it's bothering you. It's bothering you because there's some truth in it. And there's some truth in it because there's more you trying to come through. And I say all of that just to give this analogy that for me, I'm not in this process. I used to be just the biggest personal development nerd, didn't watch any movies, was just like YouTube, personal growth, everything. And now I'm just living my life based upon my intuition, meeting whatever expansion points are there and letting things arise when they have to. But when I find that when I'm authentic and being willing to play a bigger game, yeah, the fears can come up, but there's just no other way for me to go. But I think my edge is just continuing to play bigger, continuing to be bigger, continuing to take up a bigger space. And that's the best answer I can give you at the moment based on your question.
Yeah, no, I like it. And when you were talking earlier about the idea that the unknown is you, right?
Yeah. So
the unknown future, the unknown opportunities, it struck me that in some way, the unknown is also an illumination or a light to shine back on yourself, the parts and pieces that are preventing you from exploring that space.
Right.
So this cyclical nature, at the more that I lean into the intuitive call into the unknown that excites me, the more that I'm actually being blinded also by the parts of myself I haven't fully looked at or integrated or explored.
I'm met with the unknown, the parts of me that I have yet to fully know.
Yes.
By going into the unknown.
And in doing so, you are becoming a bigger version of yourself.
Right.
Right? Which is what you're saying.
And becoming more known to myself. Yeah. And just whatever fears might come up in the process of just like, how big can I get? How big can it go? Holy shit. But that's exciting too. And I think because it's mixed with that beautiful excitement. And to me, it's also just like, I'm a bit of a trickster. I'm a trickster in the sense that that's not the best. What is the energy? Not trickster, but just, I like to play, right? So it might be like I'm sitting somewhere and I want to just say something super bold to someone. And that doesn't really occur to me, most times at least, as edgy. It's more just like exciting and playful and seeing like what will come out of that conversation. I just said that thing to that person, super curious what they're going to say. And that's fun to play with. But yeah, in the past, I mean, I was like having phone, like going to workshops, having phone calls, repairing stuff, being vulnerable, saying shit I've never said in rooms of 50 people. You know, I've played in a lot of different Kundalini Tantra, breathing with people, acting like a gorilla, you know, just all kinds of stuff. And I found it so cool to just, there's just so many modalities. There's just so many like little places to play. And, you know, if you look enough, you can find something for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Cultivating that curiosity for sure.
Like, yeah. That's the piece that's never left me. And I think that's why I have gotten to where I've gotten, because I'm just fucking curious about life. It's so dope.
Yeah, that's been part of my process as well. So when you talked about little kids on a playground reading tarot cards, like I love that visual. It just seems so cliche that I'm sure some parts of LA, you know, you would see the playground and they're pulling tarot and doing readings, and that's amazing. And my partner is a big fan of tarot as well, and I'm not
totally.
And like my background in science and reasoning and analysis, it just, and astrology as well is another example where I'm like, I'm just not drawn to that. That's like not my medicine. It's not it. But then the more that I gave thought to that and the more that I realized, you know, that's been around for a really long time, and a really large amount of people get something positive from that. So maybe it isn't all just nonsense and speculation like I would package it years back. And I started sort of humbling myself and being like, you know, there's a lot of different flavors in the restaurant, and what works for them might not work for me. But I don't know, man.
Just to piggyback off that, It's like, but even in that, right? Like, to come back to your analogy of the woman you saw as soon as you jumped off of the bungee jump, you saw her differently because you were seeing yourself differently. So, and to come back to the other podcast guest, I forget the gentleman's name, but it's like, what would happen if for the next 3 weeks, you're like, something really magical is going to happen for me in exploring tarot and astrology. And then you just live into that belief. And then it's just fun. Then it's like, wow, it's a game I can play with myself. I'll probably receive 5 cool tarot astrology synchronicities. And then it's just fun because at the very least, we just get to pop and challenge our own belief that we have about, because I've done that too before. And I think certain things I've explored, it's like, I'm not drawn to explore them. So sometimes it's discerning whether it's our own biases that we have, or it's just like, this is my persona. I'm the science guy. Give me Dr. Joe Dispenza. Tell me about my DNA rearranging itself. Or if there's a genuine, like, there's something there, but it's just my own persona. And I've been to some weird fucking events, dude, that I would never go to again, but I'm glad I've been to them because I'm like, cool. I love patchouli, but I don't want everyone to smell like it.
Yeah. And it's all, I was hoping we could talk about patchouli on this one. It's all data and experiences to help with the cultivation of discernment, right? Like if you had been to one Italian restaurant your whole life, one pizza shop, and you're like, this is pizza. This is what good pizza is. Versus if you've gone to 100 and you've sampled them all over the world and you've had all different flavors, right? Then you have a more nuanced understanding of the pizza game. And you're like, oh, I see the grand perspective. And for me, like, this is it. Yeah. If you'd only gone to one personal development, or you follow one person on Instagram with one perspective about relationships and the universe, it's like, come on, you got to dabble. You got to find what you like and what you don't like.
For sure.
More fun that way.
To the pizza shops of consciousness.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to ask you about your comedy thing. Because right now I don't know if you're on tour, but you're traveling the world. And before we recorded, you said, I'm doing something in Ibiza. I have a comedy show that I'm doing. Can you talk about what that is and what you do?
So I was going to do one in Portugal as well, but that got canceled. So I extended my time in Spain, and someone who follows me who lives in Ibiza said, love to have you in Ibiza. Let's set up an event together. And I was like, cool, love doing events. And I've done stand up before, and I did it for a while in Tulum, Mexico, which is kind of a similar crowd. And we did our first event. It sold out more than I could have ever expected. We had like 60 people there, and man, it was such a, and I go into all kinds of things. What did I talk about? I talked about, you know, how there's like the spiritual, these are all jokes and I can't tell them well on a podcast, but you know, people that are like trying to have sex to like Om Shanti beats, and you know, people, are these people changing their names for spiritual reasons or for tax purposes? And just literally did a whole stand-up flow for a beautiful group of 60 people here in Spain, and it was fucking amazing. And
stand-up comedy, but focused upon personal development, spirituality as a whole.
It's kind of whatever I find funny. But usually it's, especially for crowds like that, it's, personal development, spirituality, kind of the whole funniness and humor of it. And to me, I kind of relate it. It's like a combination of philosophy, transformation, spirituality, and stand-up. It's like cosmic comedy. And it's just an experience. But what was really funny, there are some pockets, especially during the show, that I observed where it's like, part of the room had laughed and part of the room was silent. Then I'd tell a joke and I was like, this shit is really funny, humbly. And then
super humble.
Yes, super humble. And I was like, wow, no one's laughing. And then so many people came up to me after the show, and it's like they didn't want to out themselves. They were like, am I the person? Am I this? Is this me? And is it okay for me to laugh? The people, and it was cool because it really illuminated a couple things that sometimes stand-up comedy, it being valuable doesn't always mean it has to make people laugh every second. And, you know, when I think about someone like a Dave Chappelle, it's like, I'm not always laughing, but I'm always thinking. And that to me is really transformational and entertaining. And then two, also just like how needed this is. It was like such a foreign concept. No one does comedy in Ibiza. And I was like, well, I'm going to come do comedy in Ibiza. And it was amazing. And we're going to do one more show tomorrow night. And I actually have no freaking clue for the most part what I'm going to talk about. So that's exciting. Yeah.
I love that. I picture you on stage and in that awkward moment of silence, perhaps being like, come on, that was fucking funny. Like, I know you all are hiding behind your egos right now and you're scared to laugh in this crowd of enlightened warriors or whatever, but
yeah,
come on.
And the funny thing is too, it's like, I was talking about this. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it like takes people back to like kindergarten or like school where it's like, they think they just like ignore it. And it just goes away, right? Like if I'm like looking at someone and like having, they just think if they like don't answer the question and just smile, like it just, I'm just like, we're just, but I'm also just like a human dialoguing. Like it doesn't go away if you go and just smile at me. And I like to pry and prod and just like get people talking and sharing because, man, just people being unstifled. If the world was just like 10% more unstifled, the world would be so different. And you know, I think, and I hope, my wish is that my comedy ends up being an exhale for people. They come and they're like, fuck, like, I don't have to have like all natural vegan products in my toothbrush. Like, I don't need to have the cool scarf with half of my titty coming out. Like, I can just wear a black Hanes t-shirt. And within all of that, it's like, it's coming back to the main message. Being spiritual is just being yourself. You don't need to dress cool. You don't need to go to Burning Man. The most spiritual people sometimes are the people who aren't even into spirituality. It's like the older I become, the more wise I become. And it's just like, wow, that old guy loving his wife in Italy who just like kissed her on the head is so much cooler to me than Terrence Applefeather who invites, you know, people into his tent to do chakra activations. Nothing wrong with that either. I think that's cool. But it's like coming back to the simplicity of just love, whatever that looks like for you. And a reminder that it doesn't have to look like how it looks like for other people, because then it's just high school again.
Mm. Yeah, well said. And sorry, Terrence, if you're listening, we're big fans. No offense.
Been rocking with the apple feather half my life.
Yeah, you remind me, I once got my palm read in Bali, and I was talking to the woman about meditation, and I asked her, you know, how often do you meditate? Like, what's your practice? And she said very succinctly, always.
Yeah.
Like, damn, that was good. That was good.
Bar.
That was good. I see what you did there. And yeah, the more that you look around and observe life, you know, there's spirituality all around us. And
yeah,
I love what you, how you phrased it, how you said it.
And I have so much, like, you just keep saying stuff. And
yeah,
I don't want to add to
it. Please.
Because similar, not exactly the same, but even in that breath, you know, I've experimented with meditation my whole life. At one point, I remember I meditated like an hour in the morning, an hour at night, just like delta mode. And that's a brainwave frequency for anyone who's listening. It's the different frequencies of the brain, but it's another conversation. But I've noticed I can meditate less now and be way more present than I ever used to be. Right? Because when we think about presence, when you're yourself, there's less to think about. And when there's less to think about, you're naturally meditative. So to give a good analogy, I like to liken it to like Google Chrome. You open up Google Chrome, you have your browser open, and there's these tabs. One tab might be, call the electricity company, you need to handle that. Make that Facebook post. Finally book that ticket and follow your dreams. And the more that you naturally, just in life, start to close those mental physical, emotional tabs, start going to the gym, take better care of yourself, and start being in the process of listening, which funnily enough, meditation helps you do that, you naturally become more meditative because every time you close the tab, that's presence, that's potential presence. And every time I close it and handle it, now I become more present and I become more in the moment because there's nothing else for my brain to micromanage. And the more comfortable we get being in the unknown, the less we need to grab onto things and think. Because a mentor of mine, Orrin Harris, he's a really beautiful man. He said, paraphrasing, but overthinking is underfeeling. Overthinking is undertrusting. And I found that to be true through and through with myself and with clients. Overthinking is just a protective mechanism to take me out of being in the scariness I perceive the moment is. But the moment I can start to make peace with the moment, presence just becomes more of a natural state of being because I've handled all the things that are zapping presence. So if you're listening to this, if there's something that's been on your freaking mind for the past 2 weeks that you need to handle, start to handle them and you'll notice you'll start to feel more free and you'll be relieved.
I love that. The Google Chrome tabs in particular is like very visual. Yeah. Like, yeah. In the same way that subtraction is addiction, not addiction, subtraction is addition. Subtraction was addiction. That'd be so. Subtraction is addition. It's a net benefit. It's a plus. It's an additive, right? So when you remove those tabs, you're gaining something else. You're gaining presence. You're gaining peace or.
Yeah. And who wants to think about the electricity company for 2 weeks, even if it's like in the background?
I mean, we've all been there, right? Worrying about something for 2 weeks that takes 4 minutes to get off your plate. Like, what was I doing?
Yeah. I did that with a client. You know, she'd come to me and she had so many things on her plate. And I said, all right, we're going to do every single fucking thing right now on the Zoom. Okay. You're going to cancel the gym membership. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. She did everything in like 15 minutes that's been on her mind for the past 3 weeks. And she was like, I feel so much better. I'm like, no shit.
Closed a bunch of tabs.
It's all closed now. Google Chrome's firing properly.
Is there anything that I've not asked you that you are like, bro, come on, that was a gimme. Why haven't you asked me that? Or why haven't we talked about that? I just want to make sure we've got the gist of your voice out there. Anything?
Just a little microdose of my soul.
Yeah. Have we hit it all? Do you feel like this is?
I got a story I can share. It's not super long, but I think it'll kind of drive home the point of trusting the unknown. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Imagine how awkward it would be if I was like, "Nah, sorry, bro." After everything, I gotta go.
Hey, bro, I know I reserved an hour and a half, but I seriously need to do something better with my time. I have lemon water in the fridge.
Yeah, that was a rhetorical invitation. Please, what's the story?
Okay. So, 2000, and really why I'm sharing this story is to share the power of how everything lines up when you do the most quote-unquote illogical thing. So, it's 2017, February 2nd. Or 2018, February 2nd, sit in my little office. I'm dating a girl who lives in Germany, long distance love bombing. So I think maybe that's also part of the, we weren't love bombing each other. Hopefully I wasn't. That would suck. Sounds unhealthy. But anyways, it's February 2nd. I'm supposed to see her at the end of the month. I have basically nothing to my name except for a $300 credit card. And my intuition's just like, look up flights from Los Angeles to Berlin right now. I was like, okay. I look, I see a flight. It's $180 one way. And my whole soul is just like, book it, book it, book it. I book it. I paid a little bit extra for the travel insurance in case I backed out of my decision. And after $180, I booked the ticket. The only quote unquote problem was it was leaving in 2 days. I had no money scheduled to come in, and I was traveling with the other $120 on my credit card. I was like, all right, well, my soul said, do it, let's do it. But even when I was in the scariest situation, my body was just buzzing with excitement. February 3rd rolls around. friend of mine, a neighbor of mine, former coworker of mine, signed up with me and wanted to become one of my clients, pays me the day before I'm about to fly out. I'm like, okay, there's something to this. Go to Germany, literally walk to my girlfriend's apartment, surprise her. I'm like, hey, by the way, I'm here now. And she was a German Virgo. So, well, you probably got into it.
Yeah, that's so, right over my head.
Yeah, I felt that. So Germans, you know, they're very logical, linear, don't mess with my schedule type culture. Sorry, Germans. I love y'all. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have an audience of German people at your stand up. So just Germany tour canceled.
And she's a Virgo in addition to that.
Meaning... And the Virgos are very logical, very linear, very organized, neat. So me coming February 4th instead of February 27th or whatever we would do it. Big deal. So anyways, I go there. She's super happy to see me. It's all good. And kind of just totally dismantled the whole purpose of the whole lead up to that. But I get there. Still, I have some money, but not a whole bunch. A woman who I coincidentally gave a free session to 2 weeks before, who lived in Berlin, Germany. I get on a call, connect with her. She books an 8-hour VIP day where we spend like a whole transformational day together in Europe. And I'm just starting to see how all of these chess pieces were just so perfectly aligned for me to make this move. Then, fast forward, did my month in Germany. Then flash back. I had a medium reading about 6 months before. Some woman on my Facebook page was getting her mediumship training and had to give out 50 practice readings. I was like, cool, let me do this. We connect. She lives in Las Vegas, Nevada. We have like a little 15, 30-minute session, whatever it was. It's like, I feel like you're going to have a really powerful activation in England. I was like, never heard about that. But that stuck with me. So my girlfriend at the time had to go study. So I was like, cool. Well, I'm leaving Germany and I'm going to go to London for a month. Basically, I had blew through all of my money in Germany that month. I had maybe between 55 and 70 US dollars to my name. My ticket books and my first two nights to stay with a Facebook friend of a friend I'd never met. And I had a client who was supposed to pay me the day I flew from Germany to London. And I just had this feeling like she was going to back out of her payment. And surely enough, a few hours before the flight, she's like, can't do it. Sorry. And I just remember feeling all frustrated and angry. And my intuition, once again, life is always supporting our expansion. Life is always supporting us to come more into ourselves. My intuition goes, use this anger and create with it. Popped on a Facebook Live. Forget what I talked about. It was cool stuff, though. Something tells me to click to see who liked my video. I was like, okay. I scrolled through. I see one guy. It's like, click his profile. I'd met him one time at a conference. He owns a big wine company in California. We connected once. He gave me mushrooms at an after party of a conference. Super rad dude. Clicked on his profile. Once again, he lives in California. His first post is that him and his team were at the Raw Wine Festival in London. And I'm like, come on. I have to connect with this guy. I start connecting with him. I send him a message. He's like, cool, when you get to London, we can go out for dinner with my team. I get to London, make it through the gate. I got to sleep at the airport that night. I have to buy my ticket for the bus to go from the airport, Stansted Airport, into London, the city, about $18, because the pound to dollar ratio back then sucked. And I'm like, bro, that's a quarter of my net worth right now in bus. So just take the leap. I get to this coffee shop. I'm texting with him. And I don't know what, I get chills every time I tell this story, but I don't know what on God's green earth inspired him to say this. I texted him and I said, thanks so much for inviting me. I've really been moving through some tough stuff and this really means a lot. And I remember the next text message he sends me was, "Do you need help?" Mind you, I barely know this guy. Invite me out to dinner. I'm battling with my ego because I want to make a good impression and present myself as having all my shit together. But I bowed down and I was just like, yeah, I do need help. And he's like, meet me at my hotel in Chelsea or Soho, wherever he was. I'm going to give you £500 cash when I see you. Mind you, I've never met this man more than one time. It's my first day in the city. I'll never forget. I'm in this elevator of this swanky hotel. He has a dope trench coat on and just like discreetly hands me 400 something pounds. And I remember like I was like still kind of shaking and in shock just at like how everything was working out in the craziest of ways. As I was on the flight from Germany to London, I'm journaling. I exude luxury and abundance with every step and breath I take. Still like shaking and freaking out, but just like affirming it. He takes me to the best restaurants in London, you know, chickens with feathers on them still coming to the table, snails I've never seen before. And I'm like, okay, something's happening here. Stuff's flowing. I get one of my mentors PayPal'd me. Didn't even know I was going through financial struggle. He never sent me any money in my life. And the message was just like, keep your head up and keep your heart open. I was just like, you can't make this. It's like, God just sent a team of angels, just like, all right, Kyle did the thing. Time for him to be supported. I'll never forget. I had some money stacked up. I was supposed to go to Bali the next month with my now ex. And I had most of the money at this point, but not all of it. She's like, do you want to book our tickets to go to Bali on Thursday? I think it's Monday. And once again, my spirit was just like, just make a decision. And I tell her on the phone, I was like, yeah, let's book it on Thursday. Hang up the phone, pull up my Facebook Messenger. I got 4 voice messages from a guy who had been in one of my programs back in the day. He goes, dude, I just came out of this medium reading. And the medium said that a guy called Kyle was supposed to help me with emotional stuff. That Thursday, he becomes my client. Friday, he sends me an extra payment I wasn't even expecting. And I made the most amount of money I had ever made in my business that month, doing the least financially smart on a logical level decision. It created the greatest. What I learned from that was when you follow your heart and soul, you'll never be led astray. And when I viscerally, somatically, spiritually got that by taking that leap, it created this level of unfuckwithable trust that I know no matter what leap I take, it will work out. And funnily enough, to put a little cherry on the sundae, or you know, cashew milk sundae, whatever you're into, the woman who gave me the medium reading, who lived in Las Vegas, just so happened to be in London at the same time as me for mediumship training. So we end up eating fish and chips at some, you know, cool place in London after the whole fucking month occurred. And I was just like, you can't script this. And it taught me on the deepest level that really magic is done by jumping into the abyss and realizing it's everything you ever wanted.
Amen.
Oh,
it's a great way to wrap it up, man. Appreciate you.
Yeah.
And thanks for sharing all of that. And I know you got an Instagram page that I'll put in the show notes, but are there other, like a website or anywhere else people can find you or your work?
Instagram is kind of the hub. So cool. They'll see all my content, all the ways to kind of get to know and see what I'm up to on Instagram. And then there's obviously links and stuff, but Instagram is kind of the main point of contact.
Right on. And if you're listening, check his Instagram and the pinned posts are, I think one of those is the one that got me into your space. It's like the spiritual dude with the upside down sunglasses on. So
trying to make plans with a spiritual guy.
Watch that one. Thank me later and follow this dude. And I know you do coaching or I don't know what you call it. Is there a verb that you use? Is it coaching?
I call it psychic transformational mentorship.
Ooh. All right. So if you want some PTM with Kyle, look him up. But thank you, brother.
Thanks for having me, Dad.
Okay. So that was Kyle Lipton. As mentioned, he is on Instagram. There is lots of videos of him rejoicing and regaling you in comedic glory. I've included links in the show notes to that. And if you have any questions, hit him up, hit me up. I appreciate you. I appreciate your laughter, your joy, your desire to lean in and be curious and humble and graceful as we all navigate this wild cosmic joke together. Life is better with you in it. I know mine is. And I will talk to you soon.